I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, we're back with Connections, and that means if it's Thursday, it's Taylor Ann Bradford of the Gloucester Times. And Taylor Ann, welcome back.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I hope you've been able to get outside in the warm weather.
Well, you know, as we were discussing, I have, but this generally, the first weekend of March is usually one of my two big ski weekends. And, of course, that didn't happen, but I guess everybody else is okay with the warm weather.
Right. Well, I mean, it means that the trails are open for running without spikes, which is, you know, a good day in my book.
There you go. All right, and we can talk about that later. Do you have a column coming up this week?
I do,
All right, so we'll get to that.
I'm interested to see what it is.
Very good. We'll tease that. Lots going on, as always, and I think I'd like to start with an article that I think it's in Thursday's edition of the Gloucester Times. We are recording this on Thursday. And right up front is something about a street hockey rink that it's the first time I've seen it. Enlighten me, please.
Yeah, so it's so interesting because about a year ago, I was talking with Carl Ellis, the Force, about the possibilities of having a street hockey rink over at Stage Fort Park. And they had just gotten grant funding from the city CPA, and they were super excited. And then, of course, like everything else in the city, it had to be put on pause as COVID-19 kind of consumed all of our thoughts and plans for the next coming year. Now, as COVID-19 is, we're trying to figure out how to get back to some sense of normalcy, vaccines are rolling out, and projects are starting to happen again. Carl Ellis and his team over at Young Legends Street Hockey are, you know, ramping up the idea of what it would look like to really reinvent the space over at Stage Fort Park, which is right now the basketball courts. And I know that some people love dunking over there, but the city and the street hockey program have identified that not many people use the court, and that it would be great to kind of really transform that space into a street hockey rink that could also be used for roller derbies, for lacrosse, for a lot of other sports, and be accessible for everybody in the city. And so this has been a long time coming, and, you know, while the project itself was kind of put on, not necessarily pause, but they had a few roadblocks because of the pandemic. Carl Ellis and his team have been really pushing forward, making connections with local businesses, with some of the top street hockey organizations in the country to try to orchestrate how to get the best materials for their rink, and thinking about, you know, what does this look like for their program and for the teams that are wanting to play, and even toying with the idea of having a national competition come here and use the Gloucester rink once it's all said and done. So it's a really cool program, and the entire cost is about $425,000. They, you know, are still in that fundraising phase because as they had gotten a bunch of funding right before the pandemic hit, obviously, you know, financial people's checkbooks got a little bit tighter, and so they're now ramping that up and really trying to push forward so that they can start construction come this fall, with the hopes that, you know, once they start construction, it'll take 2 to 3 months, and then, you know, people can really start to enjoy the rink next year.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And, you know, Gloucester recently, we've had the cross-country bicycle races over at Stage Fort, I don't know, motocross or whatever they call that, and we had a couple of years ago, there was a big radio concert there. Why not bring in the Nationals? That sounds like a really good thing. And you have on the webs on in the Times today, in the Gloucester Times today, you have the website URL for people who would like to maybe contribute to the Young Legends Street Hockey website or to the project rather. And so we'll link to that also. Good story. All right, let's shift gears. My parish, Our Lady of Good Voyage. Nobody's, you know, very few people have been able to go to church on Sundays in the last year. I know that contributions are down, but I was totally shocked when I saw your story on the bell towers, Taylor Ann. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, the weather here in Cape Ann has been, you know, every which way. And if people remember, it got pretty blustering winds about a week ago, and it was cold, and it was very, very windy. I remember the windows of the Gloucester Daily Times were kind of frozen over, and I felt like I was in some desert tundra because it was just so cold and everyone, you can see people's faces, because it was so cold. And while everyone masked up and tried to kind of get from warm place to warm place, overnight from Sunday to Monday night, the winds blew so hard that they ripped the tiles off, the tin tiles that protect one of the Carillon towers of Our Lady of Good Voyage Church, and kind of ripped them right off, and some blew into the wind and some hung out as long as they could, and really just made it quite a big dent on the towers of the church. And so I had opportunity to speak with Father Jim and kind of get an idea of, you know, what their response was. And he said he reached out to the Archdiocese of Boston and kind of their property manager to try to figure out how to do an emergency fix of the towers, because he said that there were tiles kind of swaying in the wind that could be pretty harmful to people if they had fallen. So, you know, the immediate response, they have fixed it and they put a water sealant and it's all good. So as you drive by, it does look like there's a bit of a band-aid over the tower, but it is safe and it is the bells are being protected. But Father Jim did note that there is a potential that both of these towers need to see construction going forward, just because they're old and they've been battered by the Cape Ann winds and the weather. And so they're starting to think about that and how can they raise the funds for that, as they're also seeking to raise funds for, you know, the daily operations of their parish and what that looks like for both the paychecks of those that work there and for the maintenance of the building and, you know, the mission that they have over at that church.
And I remember, oh, now I don't even know how long ago, but it had to be probably 10 to 20 years ago, the Carillons were completely taken out of Our Lady's, and they were refurbished, and then they were reinstalled. And it took, that was a long, long, expensive project. And of course, the tower was shored up at that point. And it's a very, it's a complex structure. It's a very, simple, elegant church, but it's a pretty complex structure, those towers are. And, they're iconic. I mean, you can see them, from out in the harbor. If you're entering Gloucester Harbor, they stand out, like the proverbial sore thumb. It's a beautiful place. So I'm hoping, Father Academa can put that together because, you know, church donations are definitely down.
yeah, so we'll see. And, you know, he noted that his urge to his parish and parishioners was, you know, it's a piece of home, it's a piece of Gloucester. And, you know, they're fishermen who, as they're sailing home, you know, the first thing that they see are those blue towers, and then they know that they were close to getting back to Gloucester. And so he really, as I talked to him, that was his big kind of what he implored the people as they considered to donate, is thinking about, you know, how is this not only a legacy and a piece of the parish, but also of the city itself.
And the statue of Our Lady, I think she's something like 12 or 15 feet tall. When the fishing industry was huge here in Gloucester, the Portuguese boats, when they would be coming in, the statue would light up to let people know that the fishermen are coming home. And if anybody is curious as to see, how tall Our Lady is, what's left of the original is at the Cape Ann Museum. It was wooden. I believe the new one is sort of a composite, but the original statue up there holding of Our Lady of Good Voyage holding a fishing boat is huge, and it's been replaced at least once. But kind of interesting when you'd see that light on, and okay, you know, you're the fishermen, the Portuguese Hill fishermen are coming home. They're on the way in. It was kind of cool. Okay, well, let's hope that gets done and that stuff gets fixed. There'll be more on that to come, as I'm sure we know. And Taylor, and I don't know where to go with this one because things are changing with the COVID vaccine protocol daily, and actually they're changing for the better, from my view. People are getting vaccinated. People are getting in line. I finally got my appointment. And, you know, I say finally, but I have to say that's a relative term, because when you look at it, we're only into the second week of March, and already so many people have been vaccinated. So I think people are anxious to get the vaccination, but they also have to take a look at the big picture and say, this thing's rolling along pretty well. So, well, what's your coverage? What's your perspective of what's happening?
Yeah, so things in the city are, you know, as the state is, you know, trying to roll out vaccinations as fast as possible and is, you know, meeting, getting some speed bumps as, you know, the federal government is maybe not allotting as many as they would like, or, you know, we're running out of them faster than we would hoped. Things here in Gloucester are looking up. Karen Carroll, the city's public health director, made a presentation on Tuesday to the city council and had mentioned that as of Monday night, 24% of Gloucester populations and 58% of residents 65 and older have been vaccinated. So that's quite a bit. I know that, you know, the hope is always more the better. But 56%, if you think about that, is quite a lot of people, and really exciting to think about what that means as we go into the next phase and thinking about, you know, how can we even improve upon vaccination distribution here in the city, because it seems like the city's doing a great job and really trying to fast-track the process, make things clear and understandable. And as they do that, there's some big news for those that have been vaccinated. As we see that 25% of Gloucester residents have been vaccinated, the question now is, what does it look like for those 25%? What does daily life look like for them? And so she kind of outlined what Governor Baker had mentioned, is that there's a lot of different opportunities now for those residents. They still have to wear a mask in public. That, you know, if you're in person, you have to be 6 feet apart. You have to wear a mask. I personally, as I hear that and I hear the different state guidelines, I think, you know, like, that's really to make sure that we are, again, all in this together and making sure that people are respecting each other's space. Because even if you have gotten the vaccine, no one wears a sign saying, I've gotten the vaccine.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
It really does kind of help with that understanding. Mm-hmm. And so they have that, you know, if they're, the big thing is that if they are in, the indoors with other vaccinated people without masks, they can do that, which is awesome. They don't have to, if they're in inside space with other people that are vaccinated, they don't have to wear a mask, which I think is a really big step going forward. You know, if you were to tell me 10 years ago that was going to be a reality for us, I think I would have been blown out of the water. But that's such a big thing to celebrate for those. They also said that those that got vaccinated and are 2 weeks from their last vaccination dose may gather indoors with unvaccinated people as well from one other household without a mask. Now, the question is, you know, for those that are unvaccinated, they probably still have to wear a mask, but it does provide a little bit more breathing room for those that were vaccinated. And the last one is, and this is a big one, I think, when it comes to, you know, people as they live out daily life, as they continue doing their work and their jobs and their family lives, is, you know, what if you're exposed? What if you come in contact, right? For so many people for so long, it's been, if you come in contact, 14 days quarantine, and how much that really disrupts daily life. But if you've gotten both vaccinations, both doses, and have been 2 weeks out since your last dose, those vaccinated will not need to quarantine unless symptoms occur, which is huge, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And so those are the biggest updates, and quite exciting to kind of see how they go forward from that. And one thing I do want to note just about kind of the COVID pandemic and, you know, where we are, if you think about it, we are today, as exactly 1 year ago today is when it was declared a pandemic, and just how much our country and our world has changed since then. And I think Cape Ann Museum did a really beautiful kind of tribute to those, for the healthcare workers, for those that lives were lost due to the COVID-19. And there's a beautiful memorial happening right now over the Cape Ann Museum Green with Karens and a light show and a quilt. And so I really recommend anybody who's interested to see a piece of history as we're seeing it live be kind of memorialized and honoring for those that, you know, really were the front lines. That's over the Cape Ann Museum, and that'll be running for quite a bit of time and really lights up the whole city. So definitely check that out.
Mm-hmm. And that's just off Grant Circle, right? Oh, no. Oh, Cape Ann Museum. Okay.
Oh, Cape Ann Museum Green. So
oh, okay,
they have
yep.
their downtown location, and then the Grant Green is right next to, yeah, Grant Circle. So.
Right, okay, very good. You know, a couple of things I was thinking of. First of all, I talked with Mayor Safathia, and, you know, she's one of the few mayors that can go just by one name only, right? Safathia was, I don't want to say enraged, but she was very angry that we're not getting more vaccine, and that's directed, I believe, at the government, the national government distributors, and or perhaps it's just supply and demand, but she was kind of upset saying that Gloucester has the capability and the logistics to get the vaccine out. As much as it comes in, Gloucester can get it out. And Senator Tarr pretty much said the same thing. But again, I'm just thinking overall, you just mentioned it's been 1 year. Well, look where we were a year ago. A vaccine wasn't even thought of at that point. And generally, it takes 2-3 years to develop a vaccine.
Right, yeah, and that is crazy, and it's, to think about where we are and what we're wanting now, you know, when they declared a pandemic and things started to close down, like, you know, almost daily you think about, okay, the gyms are closing, the coffee shops are closing, and life starts to change incrementally, and then all of a sudden it shuts down. It's just, yeah, it's baffling to think about where we were and what our new life is like now. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think the mayor, Bruce Tarr, are absolutely correct. Is, you know, there is a real shortage of vaccines getting brought into the city because the state is trying, or as the federal government is trying to figure out how to distribute the vaccines. And then as the state gets a limited number of doses, they're trying to prioritize their mass vaccination sites.
Right, right.
And so, yeah, so I think it's now just a, how can we get the vaccines as quickly as possible?
Yep.
And we'll see how that goes, especially as we go into these next phases of the vaccine distribution.
The other thing I've been thinking of, Taylor, is post COVID mask wearing, because here's the thing. Oh. I'm looking at a plus and a minus on this one. I haven't, and I'm knocking on wood as I say this, I haven't had so much as a sniffle in the last year. I did not, I took a flu shot, but I did not get the flu. I have not had a cold. So the plus side is, I might keep doing that, because when I take the mask off, am I going to be more susceptible now to a cold, you know? So I'm kind of curious about that, and obviously I don't want to keep wearing the mask, but there's this little thing inside of my head, like, you know, over in Asia, you see these people have been wearing masks for years and years and years. So I'm wondering if people might just stay into that habit.
Right, yeah. I think it'd be interesting to see just how much the flu, especially, you know, how much that spikes or decreases the number of those cases. Because, I mean, I think, I can't remember where I saw it or who had stated it, but I know it was from some health department that mentioned how the flu, the cases of the flu went dramatically down, and they were elated to be knowing that. You know, as although, however somber and sad it is to know that we're in a pandemic, to know that, you know, that what we're doing to prevent the mitigation of COVID is also mitigating other things.
Yeah.
That were, you know, annual occurrences in our daily life that really kind of buckled our knees and put us, you know, in bed for a couple of days. So.
Well, if I were writing a science fiction story, I'd write that the common cold has been eradicated due to their mask wearing for the whole Earth for 1 year. So everybody comes back and there's no more colds ever. So, you know.
Yeah.
All right. Listen, Friday generally means the Taylor Ann Bradford column. What you got? Tease us with what's coming up on Friday.
Yeah. So I wrote a column last week about some granite blocks that kind of make up the breakwater over by the lighthouse in Eastern Point, and I got a lot of feedback. You know, the question was, is how does this one piece of granite flip from horizontal to vertical so abruptly? And you know, the initial response is to say, oh, it's the water. But you know, I was encouraged by some locals to do a deeper dive and get to know a little bit more of the history of these.
A deeper dive. I got that.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Thank you. And so, while, you know, the answer that we had, the hypothesis we had was correct, I got a lot of really interesting feedback. So I thought, you know, I'd really dedicate a whole another column to this to just kind of shout out the insight and the I think feedback and the knowledge that KBAM has. You know, I got emails from geologists, from historians, from residents who live right there. And so it was really cool, and I got a lot of cool artwork, and so I'm just going to kind of compile that. And also, just so that you know, it will come with the conclusion from the Coast Guard, because I was yet to receive an answer from the Coast Guard.
Ah, okay.
And so while I think that the masses have really determined the correct answer, you know, what better way to finalize it than get the answer to from the Coast Guard and the Army Corps. So we'll see if they pick up their phones today and if we get a response from them as well.
So we have a cliffhanger. Very good. and I did notice that you've gotten some very nice positive letters to the editor, too, thanking you for your columns. And so keep up that good work. I'm looking forward to that. Taylor Ann, stay safe. It's been great. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey, have a great weekend.
This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.